Hi, this is Justin Coletti of Sonic Scoop. Thanks for joining me for this week's episode of the Sonic Scoop podcast. And today we're going to be talking about the two biggest mistakes you can make in setting reverbs. These are probably the two most commonly overlooked, neglected areas in setting reverbs, and probably the two things that people figure out the latest when they are getting into their journey in audio engineering, music production, mixing, all that kind of thing. Before we get into it, the briefest of shout-outs to this week's sponsors. We got Soundtoys, one of my favorite makers of creative mixing effects. Try out anything they make for free for 30 days over at soundtoys.com. Also, big shout-out and thanks to Steinberg, makers of not only great DAWs like Cubase and Nuendo, but also a whole line of great interfaces. I'll tell you about them later. The only thing I need from you to get right into this is the most gentle smash of the like button down below if you're on the YouTube version of this podcast. Also, consider giving us a 5-star rating and review if you're on one of the audio-only versions like on Apple Podcasts. All right, let's get right into it. What are the two biggest mistakes, two biggest neglected areas when it comes to setting reverbs? And they are easily, number one, not setting a pre-delay. And number two, not EQing your reverb, either send or return. Not only am I going to go into a little more depth about why it's a problem to leave these things out, but I'll give you some ideas and insights into how to actually set these two often neglected parameters. So the big thing with pre-delay is pre-delay is a delay before your reverb happens. And when most people first get into mixing, they pull up a reverb plugin and they're like, does it sound good? Yes or no? Let's go. And that's it. But one of the controls that will give you the most ability to tailor your reverb in a way where it can be apparent without being overbearing, where it can add some dimension without taking too much space in the mix, where it can be audible without being cheesy and over the top, is by setting a pre-delay. And what this does is it separates the attack of the sound from the initial attack of the reverb. Why is this a good idea? Well, let's look into snare drum real quick. This is a common area where people use reverb a lot of the time, right? If you have your snare drum hit, and then the reverb happens the same moment your snare drum hits, it can have a little bit of a clouding effect over the meat of the snare drum. And one of the biggest problems here is the loudest part of the reverb, the beginning of the reverb, is happening when there's an even louder sound occurring. A snare drum. What adding a pre-delay is going to do for you is it's going to take the loudest part of the reverb and separate it from that initial snare a little bit, enough so that reverb is no longer masked by the snare drum. Because if the sound of your reverb is masked by your snare drum, you're going to have to keep on boosting and boosting your reverb until you can actually hear it. And at that point, it might be taking up a lot of space and adding a lot of extra density to the mix. On the other hand, if you were to just separate it a little bit, you get a clean initial attack of a snare that's unmuddied by reverb. And then pretty immediately thereafter, the snare almost blossoms and it kind of increases in sustain. And the reverb that happens isn't being masked by the snare drum. So you can hear it at a much lower level where it doesn't have to take up as much space in your mix and get away in the way of other things. And also now because your reverb is more apparent, it can also be shorter and take up less space that way as well. So that's a huge thing. And I wanted to do this episode because I just did a coaching call right before this started. I do occasionally coaching calls with some of the people who have taken my courses or just people who have done mastering with me or people who find me on the internet. And I did a coaching call with a really talented producer who has been doing a lot of his own mixing and sending me tracks to master. And we spent a good hour going over so the sound of some of his tracks, what we could adjust in them, and the sound of some of his favorite tracks. And he got a whole Spotify playlist together for me of all these tracks he was really digging the sound of. And he said, what's going on in the snare drum in each of these? And a lot of them were kind of like 90s era hip hop. Some of them was more electronic. And he was wondering, like, this sound that they're getting, there's so much sustain on this snare drum. Are they getting it with like a fast release on a compressor to bring out sustain? I've heard you talk about that. And I listened to them one after the other, and they all had the same thing going on, which was a slightly delayed reverb. And the cool thing about a slightly delayed reverb is all the things I've discussed, but that the reverb can almost sound like an extension of the snare drum. an extension of the sustain and the tone of the snare drum. Now, if you delay your reverb really, really long, it can be a dramatic effect where it's like, cha, you know, where like your reverb totally separates from the main sound. And that's going to start happening with very long pre-delay times. But if the pre-delay time is short, the reverb and the snare kind of blend together, but it almost feels like it extends out the tone, the shell, the sustain of the snare. So what's a good amount of time to pre-delay your snare by? I go into a lot more depth in this in my full-length course, Mixing Breakthroughs, but I'm going to give away some of those ideas to you right now. A good thing to do potentially, if you want the reverb to not be too apparent and kind of meld into the track well, is to time your pre-delay to the tempo of the track. So you got 120 BPM track going on. Maybe your pre-delay is the equivalent to a 32nd note, a 64th note, maybe even a 128th note. Pre-delay times that are anywhere from a few milliseconds to 30 milliseconds, 40 milliseconds, 50 milliseconds are going to blend pretty well with the initial snare hit, where it almost feels like an extension of the snare, and you're just getting a little bit of extra sustain, and you're getting some of the benefits of pre-delay without being too effecty. You start to get into kind of medium length pre-delays, maybe when you're getting to around 60 milliseconds and 70 milliseconds and 80 milliseconds, where there's starting to be this separation now audibly between the initial snare hit and the reverb that comes after it, but not so much that's this crazily pronounced effect. And then once you start getting longer than that into 90 milliseconds, 100 milliseconds, 120 milliseconds, you're really starting to hear separation where you're getting the ka-cha kind of effect rather than where it's just like extending the snare. I hope you're enjoying this onomatopoeia. I'm doing this for you. So that is the general idea. But if those pre-delay times are timed to the track, so you're figuring out what the tempo of the track is and what a 64th note is or something like that in your track, what the appropriate BPM would be, it's going to meld in a little bit more. Whereas if you pick a BPM that's not in tempo with your track, that pre-delay will sound a little late or a little early, which can actually make it stand out even more, which is not necessarily a bad thing. If you want to sound extra effecty, having a slightly late or a slightly early pre-delay time can really make that thing blossom and kind of stand out and sound a little bit more effecty. It melds into the track less, and with even less volume, you get an even more apparent reverb. So there's some notes to keep in mind. So thing number two is EQing your reverb, whether the send or the return. And this is big, and this is something that a lot of people miss when they're first getting into mixing. You generally don't need full bandwidth reverb on stuff. I've been talking about a snare example, so I'm going to keep on going on the example of the snare because it's the easiest for you to start hearing these ideas and experimenting with these ideas. But these same concepts can be applied to anything, any instrument in your mix. So one of the other things, I'm just going to talk about this coaching call, is just on right before this again. The other thing that all these tracks had in common, where he's really loving the snare sound, is that pretty much none of them had a full bandwidth reverb. In the case of the tracks that this guy was sending me, a lot of late 90s style hip hop stuff, it was often a very mid-rangey reverb after the initial snare hit. There are other genres where you might have a very bright, super bright reverb after that initial snare with very little low end in it. There's some rave tracks, now that I'm thinking about the 90s, where that was the thing, but also a lot of kind of, you know, rock and pop tracks. There's pop idioms where, you know, really bright reverb on a snare drum might be the thing where you're carving off most of the low end. There are other styles where you'd be taking off almost all of the top end off of the reverb. But in general, the most important place to have reverb is your mid-range. And there's really three components here, right? There is your low end, your mid-range, and your top end. In general, you're probably going to want to eliminate at least one of those to some degree. If you want a fairly bright reverb, maybe you're taking away the low frequency stuff. Maybe you're taking away the low frequency and some of the mid-range. If you want a kind of dark reverb, maybe you're taking away all the high frequencies. Maybe it's a mid-rangey dark reverb where you're taking away all of the highs and all of the lows, and you're just left with this mid-rangey chunk. And the reasons for this are similar to what we discussed before, that you can cover up other stuff in the mix less, get in the way of the mix less, where you don't have all of this extra reverb that's barely audible, that's only serving the purpose of taking up space and masking other things, and getting in the way of the clarity of your hi-hats, getting in the way of the cleanliness and the tightness and the impact of your kick and your bass. So that's a big thing. And just since we were talking about, you know, hip-hop, like sampled loop-based hip-hop, a way that they might have done this in that kind of genre would be to take your drum loop and then malt your drum loop. So you have a drum loop, you know, something off like a James Brown record, right? You know, this is the old school way of making hip-hop records, right? So you take your live performed drum loop, and then you might take a duplicate of it that has only snare because you took away all of the lows and all of the highs. So now you have a track that is pretty much just mid-rangey snare, and that is what's feeding your reverb. So you're not even sending anything but mid-range to the reverb. So that's one way. EQing your reverb sends, your send to the reverb. The other way is to EQ your reverb returns, what's coming back from the reverb. Either or both of those methods paired together work in so many genres. And that's something I want you to consider, is sending to your reverbs without full bandwidth and maybe coming back from your reverbs without full bandwidth. If you do those two things, you're going to have a much more elegant approach to reverb. You're going to come up with much more interesting sounds. You're going to be able to get reverbs that don't sound messy or sloppy or amateur, that don't like just suck up the whole mix and just you feel like you're jacking them up and jacking them up to even hear them, and then there's too much reverb. And you don't have to have these crazy, super long reverbs either. You can have kind of tight, resonant, sustainy reverbs with color and intrigue, and you can tailor them to the track. And you can say, we're going for the bright vibe, and you push the high end on the reverb. We're going for the dark vibe, and we're taking a lot off of the top. So those would be the two biggest things I'd add. If we want to go even deeper, I could give you some ideas about reverb times. Maybe we'll do that in some other podcast episode sometime. But this and a lot more about reverb you can find in my full-length course, Mixing Breakthroughs. If you don't want to do some full-length course, I can also get you something totally for free, my Mix Habits Workshop, the 5 Habits of Truly Great Mixers that you can get at sonicscoop.com/mixhabits. That's sonicscoop.com/mixhabits. All right. Big thanks to you for hanging out. Do you have any tips of your own about how to use reverbs, how to set pre-delays, how to EQ a reverb? Let me know in the comments down below if you're on the YouTube version. If you're listening to the podcast version of this, you can always shoot me an email at podcast@sonicscoop.com. That's podcast@sonicscoop.com. Big thanks again to Sound Toys, makers of some of my favorite creative mixing effects. Try out anything they make for free for 30 days over at soundtoys.com. Also, big shout out and thanks to Steinberg, makers of not only great DAWs like Nuendo and Cubase, but also a whole range of killer interfaces. They got their UR series for smaller studios. Actually some large versions of the UR series, and they've got their AXR series that has the Rupert Neve designed preamps in there, a tremendous amount of connectivity. So great stuff. Definitely check them out, steinberg.net. This has been Justin Coletti of Sonic Scoop. Thanks for hanging out with me. Go reverbing. See you next time.
Ever tried reading while jogging, cooking, or even juggling flaming torches? Yeah, doesn't end well. But with audiobooks.com, you can conquer books without the circus act. Dive into over 450,000 titles, including more than 10,000 free ones. Get hooked on a bestseller, find your next obsession, or finally read that classic you've been avoiding since high school. And here's the inside scoop. Sign up today for a free 30-day trial and snag your first 3 audiobooks on the house. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcastfree today. That's audiobooks.com/podcastfree.